This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the seventh swap is still in the process as the first phase. The release of six Israeli captives have taken place earlier on Saturday. Now we are awaiting 620 Palestinians who are to be released. Now, this will be the largest single release of Palestinian prisoners since the ceasefire agreement, and exchanges have been taking place. However, the Israeli regime was supposed to release these Palestinians earlier, but they continue to violate this ceasefire agreement. We'll be taking a look at this on this Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Out of London, Fahima Mohamed, broadcaster and commentator. Out of Beirut, researcher and political analyst, Christopher Halali.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, thank you both for being with me. Well, Fahima, let's start from where we are. during this recording that so far the Israeli regime has not released those 620 Palestinians. And I was just recently talking to my correspondent there on the ground who said that actually when the Israelis had put T-shirts on these prisoners and telling them that we will never forget, we will never forgive, the Israelis had written there that on the T-shirts, then some of the prisoners themselves wrote on the walls that actually, we will never forgive, and we will never forgive. And that's part of the delay that now the Zionist cabinet is meeting about this. I mean, your thoughts about this delay.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.
This round of the prisoner exchange highlights the fragility of the current ceasefire agreement between Hamas and Israel. And it's been said that Hamas is leveraging the exchanges to pressure Israel into full compliance with the terms of the January 2025 Gaza ceasefire agreement, particularly its humanitarian protocol. And we also have Hamas spokesman Abdul Latif Al-Kanour has emphasized that the continuation of future swaps depends on Israelis fulfilling its commitments. And Hazem Qasim also framed this current exchange as a significant achievement for the Palestinian resistance, accrediting it to the steadfastness and the sacrifices of the people during the Al-Aqsa flood operations. On the other hand, Israel's delaying in releasing the 620 Palestinian prisoners, coupled with reports of assaults inside of a prison and alleged manipulation of the release list, has fueled further tension. So the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's emergency cabinet meeting underscores how politically sensitive these exchanges are within Israel, as the government forces both domestic pressure and international scrutiny. Now, this round not only marks the end of the first phase and of the ceasefire deal, but also raises questions as to whether the agreement can hold further friction without further friction, and also if Israel continues to delay releases, Hamas may halt future exchanges, complicating the fragile ceasefire and potentially reigniting hostilities.
Right. Well, Christopher, your thoughts. I mean, do you think that the regime is doing this out of frustration of not really reaching any of its goals? Or how do you assess this? That, as our guest in London said, it's extremely fragile, and now we see this type of delay. I mean, your assessment of it all.
Well, as you both rightfully point out, this deal is indeed fragile. But what's more important is that Hamas's leadership has been saying from the beginning of ceasefire negotiations, even last year, and when I met with them in August to interview them in Doha, I sat down with Dr. Bassem Naeem and Osama Hamdan, and they emphasized that since the beginning of last year, every agreement has had issues only on the Israeli side, and that the Israelis have tried to drag their feet, have tried to use technicalities, have gone back to the mediators to add additional terms to the agreement that has already been agreed upon by all parties. And so what we have is a pattern of behavior by the Israeli government that continues to hamper all efforts at a stable and secure peace in this phase. And to move to stage two, of course, as we rightfully pointed out, my colleague, we're at the end of stage one now. So we're supposed to move to the phase two of this peace ceasefire agreement, which has to be renegotiated by both sides, the terms of which have been broadly outlined during these negotiations through the mediation. However, what this ends up doing is it ends up instilling an atmosphere of unknowability, an atmosphere of fear, an atmosphere of paranoia, an atmosphere of distrust. And with that, it makes that second stage and that second phase much harder to be agreed upon. It builds that distrust. And then what you end up having is an exchange of words on all sides and in Western media as to who is to blame for the breakdown in the ceasefire talks. However, it's been clear, and it's been well documented, not only by me, but by many other journalists and academics, that in these ceasefire negotiations, the burden of the blame goes to the Israeli side, who continue to not only hamper, in this case, the 620 Palestinians who are to be free in the same time period as the Israelis who were being freed. However, humanitarian aid and support has also been denied. So this has to be understood in its proper context.
Well, what is the reason for it, Fahime? Your thoughts? I mean, that there were so many violations by the Israeli regime during this first phase. Is it that the regime really doesn't want the ceasefire to hold? Does it want to restart the genocide? And does it not want its own captives? I mean, how do you see it?
Well, like our guest mentioned, that this could have been done in last November. And of course, even a lot of the hostages were killed through the Hannibal directive, which no one seems to sort of mention in the mainstream media as much and not emphasize that. And everything is always going to be blamed only on Hamas, even if we do see it on other social media platforms and sort of, you know, commentators with regards to what really is the delay. And Netanyahu's cabinet is currently deliberating on whether to proceed with the release of the 620 Palestinian prisoners, when actually they are actually hostages, which were there, thousands of them, for many, many sort of like years without even any kind of, you know, sort of detention of keeping them in there legally. And it also contains a lot of young people as well. So they do have the actual pressure of the very far right wing sort of cabinet, as well as the hostages on one side. And there's also Israel. If Israel, you know, proceeds with the release, it would likely to be under pressure from international mediators like Egypt, Qatar, and the UN. And this could also hopefully, you know, make some sort of like, you know, sustainability with regards to the negotiation to keep it alive. The delays are there because, again, Netanyahu doesn't want to feel like as if he's been undermined by his authority with regards to releasing so many. And the deal at the beginning that was done was that if the hostages were to be released with the prisoner exchange in November last year, then they would have less Palestinian prisoners. But the longer they kept it, then that's when more prisoners were actually meant to be released. That's why we have that huge number now. And not everyone understands that, and it looks like a weakness from the Netanyahu cabinet. And on the other hand, they've also had, you know, many times where Israel has obviously not actually fulfilled their part, knowing that they are distrustful, they don't actually uphold their part of the deal, and then they blame Hamas as well as, you know, the Palestinians for whatever reason it is, and it's mainly looked upon from one side on the mainstream media. So regardless of what's going on in reality, unfortunately, we always see the one narrative and the propaganda, but also now, because of social media, we are seeing even the prisoners that are being released clearly, of course, from both sides, there is going to be whatever physical, mental, emotional trauma, but the physical trauma is seen widely by when people are being released from the Israeli side.
Right.
The Palestinians are definitely under much more sort of like, you know, humanitarian kind of like, you know, against humanitarian law with regards to the way in which they treat their prisoners as well.
Right, indeed. Well, Christopher, let's talk about how each swap has turned into a public relations victory for the Palestinian resistance.
Well, of course, it's turned into a public relations victory because Hamas is, and the leadership in Gaza have proven themselves to be by far the most stable, secure partners in reaching agreements and fulfilling their obligations under those agreements. They also have shown that every single aim of the Israeli government under Bibi Netanyahu have failed to be achieved. They said that they would destroy Hamas. They didn't destroy Hamas. They said that they would destroy all of their networks. They didn't destroy their networks. They were still in active combat operations until finally the Israelis took too many losses and they realized that they could not achieve victory on the battlefield, just like the Americans couldn't in Vietnam or in Afghanistan or in Iraq. So what you are seeing now is you're seeing a people under a genocidal regime that has destroyed all of their homes, their schools, their hospitals, that has killed at minimum over 40,000. The numbers are probably much, much higher. And still they resist. Still they resist without electricity, without water, without fuel. Still they resist. And so that's the achievement here. The achievement is that no matter what Israel was willing to do, the Palestinians were resisting. And even under such conditions, even under such a brutal genocidal campaign, the likes of which we have not seen in the past decades, what ended up happening? Hamas was the bigger player and said, let's come to an agreement and let's reach some durable peace, at least, to achieve some of the aims and goals to protect our people. Not to cave, not to give in, not to give up their right to liberation and to return, but ultimately to protect their people and ultimately to secure some of their goals, which were, for example, the release of so many Palestinians who have been kept in the dungeons of the Zionist regime in this administrative detention, which is basically purgatory for, you know, a violation of international law and all legal codes and precedents around the world.
Well, Fahime, when we see the sheer numbers of resistance fighters and how well equipped they are and the way that they come out in force bringing the captives, I mean, what message is this sending to the Israeli regime?
Just like it's just been mentioned, that they are very defiant and they obviously cannot be, completely not in existence like Netanyahu wanted, or even like Trump has mentioned, to get rid of them. Even they failed even when it came to Lebanon with Hezbollah. So I think that, you know, this military buildup is definitely something that we're going to see continue and expand in operation. And it seems to be the only one there that is actually still in compliance with the actual ceasefire agreement. And Israel does look like as if it has actually now failed in many ways, not even looking at it from the point that they still have strict journalists coming in, or none, shall we say, from the Western media, to show that their own people have lost a lot of hope in their own sort of government and administration. There are constant riots, even just before the ceasefire, which no one really talks about in the mainstream as well, against the Netanyahu government. And the fact that also they do blame Netanyahu for prolonging this actual war. It has caused such economic loss for Israel. It has come to the point where they wanted to secure the north as well. That's why they went into Lebanon, so that people could return. And that hasn't happened. If anything, more and more people have left Israel, not wanting to come in. Investments, their actual economy has, you know, gone so down. People don't even want to fight in their actual war. So even if they wanted to reinstate whatever they wanted to without, trying to break this agreement, they don't have the manpower. People have actually, you know, witnessed the fact that their soldiers are actually in real trauma. They don't want to fight. They're not like the resistance group. And at the same time, they have been forcing even their own people, like the Orthodox Jews, to actually, for the first time ever in decades and years, to actually also fight through conscription, which also caused more and more sort of conflict within their own framework and in their own government. So there is a lot of people have left Israel. They don't feel safe and it's not stable. So again, I know there is a lot of, you know, rebuilding and settlement that's coming in the West Bank. And again, no matter how many they release of the hostages and the prisoners in Palestine, they are obviously still also taking it out on the people that are there in other areas in the region. So it's not really fair. And again, they are still getting away with it. And if they are saying that people have to move away with this Trump's sort of, you know, idea of this new Riviera that needs to be built, that's another scare for people that they would never return again. And who will be taking part in that sort of rebuilding and taking charge? And again, you know, were they ever going to return to the homes that they've actually, you know, lived for generations and decades? So again, there's a lot to sort of discuss, and it is a day by day sort of, you know, assessment mm-hmm. as to what happens. But it really is Israel's call, and they're the ones that actually could break this and actually end this, or right. They'll have hopefully the international sort of, you know, pressure to actually make sure that they uphold it.
Right. Interesting point there. What about that, Christopher? They're actually the ones that can break it. I mean, we keep seeing these delay tactics are not sticking to their commitments. Do you think that they will carry out the rest of the commitments? First of all, we're looking at the release of the Palestinian prisoners that were supposed to be released earlier today.
I mean, I wish I had a crystal ball, but I can at least make a prediction. And my prediction would be that I believe that the Israeli regime does not want a just and durable and lasting peace. They don't want to see a Palestinian state. They don't want to give equal rights to Palestinians. They deny the right of return. And in this particular situation, with this ceasefire on a knife's edge, we are well aware that Bibi Netanyahu's coalition is very fractured, very weak, and that the former far-right ministers have called for a resumption of the total annihilation of the people of Gaza. They've called for the complete expulsion of all the Palestinians there, and some of them have openly endorsed Trump's plan with the caveat that Trump should take it over and then give it to them. So I don't foresee, at least with this regime, under this fascist government, that there will be a just peace in Gaza, that there will be an authentic partnership for rebuilding. This regime is committed to a genocidal policy, and that's their entire faith, and they're backed by the United States and other Western powers and regional proxies, I might add, which we must remember. And so it is my concern that a lot of these things are creating a fight, a complete kind of situation where eventually everyone's going to put the blame on each other's side and there'll be a resumption of hostilities. And in that situation, we know that the Trump administration, especially given the situation of the Israelis still being held in Gaza, the Trump administration has said, quote unquote, you know, let's let hell break loose there. Mm-hmm. So the fear is that with the resumption of hostilities, that the regime will be even more barbaric this time around. That's the real fear. We have to be prepared for the Israeli regime to try to destroy any chances of peace now. And of course, I hope that the world's people, the people of the world, will continue to fight and defend the Palestinian people and the people of the region against this brutality and barbarism that we're seeing.
Well, Fahima, I'd like your perspective on the same question, really. Your thoughts about the likelihood of the genocide continuing against Palestinians, because if we don't get to phase two and they do not reach any type of agreement, it could definitely, the onslaught could restart.
Well, before even the onslaught starts, we have to understand that, you know, this the actual entire war did actually end up where there was, you know, famine. There still is. There's not enough humanitarian aid that's come in. And even recently, when they were supposed to have a certain amount coming in, there were blockades from the Israeli side. And they were, you know, not again, you know, upholding to the actual ceasefire agreements. So for the people itself, as much as they are resistant, it is already in a very dire sort of situation with basic needs. And the emergency is absolutely in desperate need for them to continue with these kind of talks and to have it continue and upheld, because everyday people are actually suffering. And we do see, of course, you know, the Hamas resistance group being very well and very strong and things like that. And obviously they have their own to do, but we have to also question, you know, everyday people, unfortunately, they are not there to actually be taken care of on a personal level. They do not have the security. They do not have emergencies kind of, you know, set up by even sort of the outside, right, you know, Red Cross and things like that coming. And the aid has been also attacked. So they definitely need to do much more in order to uphold this for the everyday people in Palestine.
Well, Christopher, simply by observing the ceasefire and the lack of commitment by the Israeli regime in upholding its agreement and the way the Zionists were forced to release Palestinian prisoners, I mean, your thoughts, isn't it just more proof that the only way to deal with such a regime is resistance?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think since the Nakba and even before the establishment of the so-called State of Israel in 1948, the only way that Palestinians have been able to achieve various goals and aims has been through the use of armed resistance. Even peaceful resistance has not borne much fruit. And that's because, as many other scholars, activists, and revolutionaries have pointed out, most especially some very prominent ones, that, you know, as Kwame Ture once said, that your enemy needs to have a conscience, right? And the United States, and I would argue Israel, have no conscience. They have no ability to understand what they are doing in terms of morals and ethics, because they lack those moral and ethical convictions that would give someone the idea about the dignity and the humanity of the other, right? They set up this imperial outpost, this colony for the West, to carry out its operations, to carry out its agenda, to divide the region, to bring the region into conflict, perpetual conflict, and to expel these people for their own religious fantasies. And so with that understanding, how can the Palestinians achieve anything? The international institutions are all on the Palestinian side. International law is on the Palestinian side. The International Court of Justice has sided with the Palestinians under all of the legal obligations that the Israeli regime is supposed to adhere to. And still there has been no ability, because Israel is protected by the United States. The only way the Palestinians can resist is through armed struggle at this point.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me, Ifahim and Mohammed, broadcaster and commentator out of London, and Christopher Helali. Lucky you, Christopher, you're in Beirut, a researcher and political analyst. And think about us tomorrow, Christopher. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Youth Station. Well, this is Asma. I'm so happy to be here again in the cozy, sweet corner. And then with me I have...
Brother Ali. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam. Well, how's everything, brother?
Alhamdulillah, everything's good. And I hope everything's good with our audience as well.
Inshallah, yeah. In everyday life, there are many topics that would get into our head on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Like there are some things that you would maybe, if you have interaction with other people outside the home, yeah. You're in workplace, you're at a school, everywhere. If you're in interaction with human beings, one of the topics that would be always hunting you is that, how can I tell this person not to get too close to me? How can I just tell them that, okay, these are my private issues. I don't want to talk about them with you. How can I just illustrate this border and make everybody know that, okay, this is the exact point that you shouldn't cross?
You're talking about like being too inquisitive, right?
Yeah.
So the thing is, like, first thing, is you have to be clear in your statements. You need to let them know. But even before that, you know, people get inquisitive. People ask like personal questions that you don't want to be asked.
Yeah.
You know, what's the reason behind that?
What?
When we are interacting with them, we give them...
this freedom.
Yeah, we give them this freedom. We give them this feeling that they don't feel ashamed to be asked.
But no. Trust me, sometimes it's not about you giving them the freedom. There are some people that by trait, they are like this. By nature, they're like this. Like, I would say that sometimes they're not just inquisitive or too much nosy, or they just put their nose where it doesn't belong. No, it's not just about that. Sometimes it crosses the borders of being polite, or I would consider those attitudes or behaviors or even questions as... not being put in that structure of mannerly behavior. Sometimes it happens that some people by nature are just like this. You don't, the problem is not with you.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is with them.
And it's pretty normal for them.
It's pretty normal for them, yeah. But then you take it as not normal.
So sometimes, you know, if you're always answering to all their questions, so if you're always free with them,
mm-hmm.
they're free with you.
But so I'm just telling you that...
From the beginning, you have to set boundaries. Like, you have to be clear and consistent.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm saying that sometimes it's not me. Trust me, I have had this experience. Like, there were some people, like, at university, at some other places, in the daily interactions, like, there are some people that when they get to you, they feel like you are... I don't know what they think about you, but then you're not interested in human beings, generally speaking. Like, mm-hmm. from your attitude, it's very clear that you're not interested in interaction with other people. You are so, you know, limited to your own private zone.
Right, uh-huh.
You don't show any feeling of getting close to other people. Then they come to you. They always approach you. They would love to break the ice always with you. They would like to ask you questions that does not belong to them, that is not their concern or shouldn't be their concern, but they get into you without you even giving them that freedom to ask you. Like, from the very beginning, you start to ignore them. You start to not to answer their questions. Yeah. Isn't it the way to make people understand that I'm not into...
Okay, so that's a basic way. That's a first step.
Yeah.
So there's a first step that works for the basic people.
Mm-hmm.
So the basic inquisitive people. You know, if you're ignoring them, you're not answering to them, that would make them stop.
Yeah, I used to think
that
this would make them
stop. But the people, like, always putting their nose where they shouldn't,
mm-hmm.
for them, you need to clearly talk to them.
Yeah, and now this is the question.
So you have to be consistent about your limits.
Yes.
But be respectful. Remember one thing. Like, you have to be respectful, and you need to draw their attention to your limits. Like, you know, these are my limits. Please don't cross these. In a good way, in a respectful way, whatever you mm-hmm. think that person wouldn't mind, and he should also understand your limits.
Yeah. You know what? To ask this question, that why people are like this, some people, of course, not all of them, why some people have this tendency to ask questions, to put their nose where it doesn't belong, to cut it very
sometimes
shortly.
Sometimes the reason behind it is, like, the people are curious. They
yeah,
always
I was
know,
just
like,
saying
what's
that.
Happening in other people's life.
Yeah, I was just saying that this question, I know that it might be illogical because human beings are different from one another. Like, mm-hmm. there is no conduct book to say that this human beings must be like this. Those human beings must be. No, human beings are different, and there is this spectrum of colors out there.
Mm-hmm.
But then the question is that for those people who have this trait, is there any way to change them?
It would take time, right? So it depends on, like, what's the reason behind them being this way. So exactly. So as I said, it could be due to curiosity. They want to know, like, what's happening in other people's life. And this could be due to their good intention. So they care about other people. So, for example, if they know, like, you know, something's going wrong in, like, someone XYZ's life. So they, out of the worry, out of, like, caring for them, they go and try to inquire about the situation. So that's the other thing, like, the other person, he wants to be inquired, or he wants to share his situation or not. That's another thing.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back. And before the break, we were discussing that this situation can be sometimes confusing. For instance, your friend
mm-hmm.
had a haircut. When you meet her, like, you know, sometimes she wants to be noticed. She wants a compliment. Oh, you've had a haircut. You're looking good, or something like that.
Yeah.
So, over here, if she doesn't get that compliment, she would be like, "Oh, no one's noticing me, man." Especially this might happen between the couples.
Yeah, well, with friends, that's a bit different. Like, I mean, friends usually do not admire each other that very explicitly. You know what I mean? I mean, things are different with friends. But then, as for this occasion, then how it comes to be related to being nosy?
Exactly. That's the thing, right? So this being nosy, like identifying people as being nosy is a complicated subject, because this thing could be being nosy or being like, you know, this thing is subjective. For example, like, you know, if you're going on the street and some random guy you see on the street and he compliments me, oh, you're smelling good today, what are you wearing? So this, I don't feel bad over here, right?
Yeah.
So I take it as a compliment.
Oh, yeah.
So even if on
but
the other,
maybe
on the
there
other
would
hand,
be another
on the other
person.
Hand, like, you know, if I'm stressed, if I'm worried about something, and I'm like going in on any public transport, I'm traveling through metro, I'm sad, I'm sitting alone. So there's some just random guys asking me, hey, what's up, brother? Like, you seem to be down today.
Yeah.
Like, what's up? Like, is everything all right? I would feel him like, you know, I would think that he always, such a nice thing of him. Like, he's asking me. But sometimes the person, like, he, like just, you know, just, why do you care?
Yeah, what is it to you?
Yeah. So it could be both the ways, right?
Now I get what your point is exactly. You're saying that sometimes it's not the matter of being nosy. Sometimes it's a matter of caring. And it's very subjective. Some people could take that.
It's subjective on both the sides.
Yeah.
It's subjective, like the person who is inquiring, it could be due to curiosity. Again, like I've repeated this a certain number of times. For both the sides. For example, like the person, that person could be doing it with a good intention or with a bad intention. And this person could take it in a good way or a bad way.
Well, but you know, I guess as human beings, we already have that much of experience and knowledge to differentiate. You know what I mean? I mean, based on the attitudes, we can recognize if they're having good intention or not. But then the occasion that we are talking about, right, as in today's episode, what we are discussing is when people shouldn't be talking about stuff you don't like them to talk about or you don't like them to know more about. You know what I mean?
For example, God forbid, if a couple has gone through a divorce or something.
Yeah.
The man or the woman, like, they're upset, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the life has changed, like, you know, it turned suddenly to a different situation.
Yeah.
So, like, when they're in public, they don't like to be talked about their divorce.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
Stuff. So, you know, these things, like, sensitive topics.
That's what I'm saying,
you
yeah.
You know, this is a basic thing, like, you know, everyone understands.
Mm-hmm.
So try to keep yourself away from these type of inquiries. So definitely the other person wouldn't like it. So whatever you feel are the sensitive topics.
This is the red line and you shouldn't cross it. Yes, we're talking about relationships and interactions and about something that I guess nobody would love to meet a nosy person who would like to ask millions of questions and get to know you more while you don't want yourself to be exposed to the public. You mean, I mean, like, my life is not a public property. I don't want it to be known by every other strangers.
So one thing that you can do is, like, the basic thing that when you interact with someone, so behave in such a way that, you know, the other person should, he should feel it himself that, you know, this guy is...
So this is the basic. The basic is that from the very beginning, from the very first square, you show other people that you're not a
like,
person
I don't
who's
want my personal
to...
space to be invaded.
Yeah.
So just, you know...
So my behavior, first thing.
Yeah, keep some distance.
My behavior must show that I need that distance. And yeah. I have a private zone for myself that I don't want it to be exposed.
And the second step comes when the person doesn't understand.
Exactly.
So, you know...
Which happens most of the time.
Yeah. So he is like, you know, you just, you know...
Politely.
Clear. Yeah, politely be clear. And so, like, you know, I don't want you to get involved in this. Like, yeah. I don't like that to be answered.
Yeah. See, I'm not interested in more questions.
So be polite and let them know.
Yeah. And aside from that, is there any other suggestion, any recommendation?
And be clear, and sometimes not just about, like, you know, people being inquisitive and your personal stuff or something. It's sometimes like, you know, in life of some people, like, you know, that live together with others and all, you know, sometimes people use you. They make use of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, especially when you're living in a dormitory or something, people use you. So over here, just make yourself clear.
Yeah.
That, you know, you
make a firm stand.
Yeah. Firm stand.
That and you, show them that you don't want any more of interactions. Of exactly. any other questions or answers or anything like that. And please do not be shy or do not be sad about being judged by other people for this issue. Because some people ignore the consequences because they don't want to be rejected by the community.
Yeah.
Don't be like that. If something is bothering you, something related to this topic that you don't want other people to know about
you. Or else what happens is next day, you know, that, you know, today he asked you the question and the next day everyone knows about it.
Exactly. Yeah. So don't be shy and have a firm stand for yourself. So I hope you do not have much of these people around, at least much of them around you. But then this was all for today's episode. I hope you have just enjoyed it. Until another session, I leave you to God's never sleeping eyes. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings. Be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Western governments and media remain silent on the Zionist regime's genocide in Gaza while cracking down on those who speak out. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for the second part. published on Chronicle wrote under the heading of the Zionist regimes, as they claimed right to defend itself, politicians and the Australian media have justified the onslaught on Gaza. The killing or abduction of several hundred civilians was heinous in their eyes. But the Zionist regime's slaughter of tens of thousands of Palestinians, including hospital staff, journalists, and UN employees, is apparently not. Criticism is rare, condemnation non-existent, and justification common despite the mass of evidence against the Zionist regime. The International Criminal Court, ICC, has issued a warrant for the arrest of genocide architect Benjamin Netanyahu. His status is described as at large. He is accused of being allegedly responsible for the war crime of starvation as a method of warfare and of intentionally directing an attack against the civilian population, as well as the crimes against humanity of murder, persecution, and other inhumane acts. The accusation of genocide against the Zionist regime government was found to be plausible in January 2024, with the Zionist regime not only refusing to obey the court's instruction to desist, but committing even more crimes. Despite all of this, in January 2025, the Australian Attorney General, Mark Dreyfus, was sent to Israel for friendly discussions with senior government officials, excluding Netanyahu, but including President Isaac Herzog, Foreign Minister Gideon Saar, and Justice Minister Yariv Levin. The reason for the visit was to pacify the Zionist regime after Netanyahu's theatrical outrage over Australia's vote for a UN General Assembly resolution calling for the rapid withdrawal of Israel from the 1967 occupied territories. Speaking at a United with Israel rally on October 13, 2023, Dreyfus described himself as the son of a Holocaust survivor. In fact, his father, George, moved to Australia from Germany shortly before the start of the Second World War. "There is no excuse for the atrocities of resistance groups," he told the rally, adding, "There is no justification. This was not just an attack on the state of Israel, and it was not just an attack on the people of Israel. This was an attack on the Jewish people." Clearly, on October 7th, it was not an attack on the Jewish people, but on a regime occupying Palestinian land in violation of international law that well before October 7 was massacring Palestinians, starving them, and depriving them of the basic necessities of life. Dreyfus referred to Israeli children butchered in their beds. An infinitely greater number of Palestinian children have been butchered in their beds or martyred on the streets of Gaza, but he is not known to have made any public statement about this. The Associated Press reported on January 25, 2025, that 13,000 Palestinian children had died since October 7. The UN puts the figure at more than 13,000. Other estimates are much higher, but the true figure is not known because of unrecovered bodies under the rubble. Palestinian and international aid agencies put the number of orphaned Palestinian children at close to 40,000. There is now a new category of wounded children with no surviving family, WCNSF, numbered 17,000 just by March 2024. Thousands of other children have been killed by the Zionist regime military in Gaza, the West Bank, and Lebanon just in recent decades. Not once has Mark Dreyfus or any other Australian government minister or shadow minister described the mass killing of civilians in Gaza by the Zionist regime since 2023 as murders or atrocities with no excuse or justification. The government's intervention is limited to remarks about humanitarian catastrophe without directly naming who is responsible and calls for restraint and a ceasefire. The mass killing of Palestinian children, often in the most atrocious circumstances, is a subject not even up for discussion. While taking a moral stand against the killing of Israelis, neither Dreyfus nor his ministerial colleagues have taken a moral stand against an Israeli regime prime minister indicted for war crimes and crimes against humanity and a government accused by the ICJ, International Court of Justice, more than a year ago of being guilty of genocide. Ignoring the court's instructions to desist, the Zionist regime continued its program of total destruction, mass killing, and ethnic cleansing. The Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has claimed moral clarity when speaking of the killing of Israeli Jews on October 7, 2023. He has described the resistance group Al-Aqsa Storm Operation as a terrible atrocity, as indiscriminate and abhorrent, as cold calculating butchery, as pitiless brutality, as mass murder on a horrific scale, and the slaughter of people. Yet, differential to the Israeli lobby, as Australian politicians always are, when it comes to the obliteration of Gaza and the Zionist regime's mass murder of Muslims, Albanese and his ministers have not used one of these expressions. While offering boundless sympathy to Jewish Australians, the Albanese government has acknowledged only concern among Muslim Australians. They have the right to expect Albanese to express his moral clarity by condemning Israel for what is globally regarded as one of the worst genocides in modern history. Instead, they have heard the most deafening sound of all, silence.